You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's Neil Atkinson. I'm joined by Dan Austin and by John Gibbons on Tuesday morning to talk about the entire report, the independent report into what happened at Paris on the 28th of May last year and its recommendations and so on and so forth. And Dan, first and foremost, the process has been followed. This report has come out. It is a complete, not just vindication of Liverpool supporters, but it also praises Liverpool supporters for the way in which they reacted to the events, which, not for the first time, feels as though it was far better than those in authority and those who are meant to be in control of those events.
Yes, and the report is absolutely correct to do that. From before the game actually belatedly kicked off, it was quite clear what the line of the authorities was and what they were trying to do. They were trying to protect their own reputations by shifting blame onto supporters that even if it had been true at the time, they had no evidence for, because it was before the match had even kicked off and you couldn't have possibly investigated. Obviously, everybody that was there knew that it wasn't true anyway. And everybody that attended, first of all, saved lives, and the report states that overtly. It's in black and white. It's there forever, official. No one can ever tell you any different. And you might imagine saving lives to be running into a burning building and pulling someone out or something, you know, kind of overly heroic like that. But by standing still and by monitoring your own breathing and that of those around you, if you were somebody that did that, then it's true that you saved the lives of the people around you. And a panel of experts, including politicians, lawyers, academics and beyond, has found that and has stated it in a document that will exist forever. So that means that everyone that went should be genuinely very proud of themselves, because their behaviour means that there are people, God knows who and God knows how many, that are alive today who otherwise would not have been if they'd behaved in a different way, if they'd have panicked, if they'd have retaliated against...
Behaved in a perfectly reasonable
way. In an understandable way. Yeah. If they'd have retaliated, for example, against brutal and provocative forms of policing that were taking place. And then subsequently, those same people, through a really coordinated and successful communications campaign, have not allowed the attempt to cover up by the authorities and by UEFA to take place. It's very clear that that is what they were trying to do. They were trying to do it on the night. They tried to do it in the days, weeks, months afterwards. Some people are still trying to do it, even though there are now three reports which state the truth with great accuracy. And that, again, is testament, in my mind, to the knowledge, the experience, the empathy, the compassion, and the talent of people that follow Liverpool, really. None of the people that tried to cover this up banked on that. And from the very get-go, everyone who got their phone out, took a video, posted things online, spoke to the media in any country, all of the people who contributed to this report or previous reports in big numbers and in very good faith have all made an enormous difference, not just to telling the truth of what happened, but also having in black and white the various failures of all these organisations and what needs to be changed in order for the same or worse not to happen again.
Yeah, it's a fantastic,
vindication for Liverpool supporters. The report goes much further than I expected it to, if I'm honest. But then I was thinking about it on the way in this morning and thinking, you know, if you weren't a football person, and by that I mean someone who travels and watches, you know, football at home and abroad, and you were asked to look into this, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, what on earth? Like, how were these people put through this and paid a lot of money for the privilege? It is, you know, what we accept as football supporters is scandalous, really, but this was on another level, and people were right to say, no, this is fundamentally wrong. It was dangerous. You know, the report says it's you know, paraphrasing, it's a miracle that lives weren't lost. You know, and it's true. You know, a lot of people got hurt, be that by the police themselves who were there to protect us, or by, you know, getting attacked by local youths afterwards. So a lot of people were hurt, and I'm not diminishing, you know, those, you know, injuries and psychological effects that are ongoing. But it is a miracle. The report is right that life sort of weren't lost, really, and the fact that they weren't, like Dan says, is down to the behaviour. Well, like the report says, more importantly, sorry, Dan, is down to the behaviour of football supporters who stay calm, who unfortunately have lived experiences of these things, and as a result, you know, were able to sort of modify the behaviour to a certain way. And it is unacceptable, and the report, you know, should just be the start now, because, you know, fundamental changes need to be made. You know, I'm sure we're going to come on to this, and I'm sure Dan will say more eloquently than me, but, you know, changes need to be made. People need to lose their jobs, but also the way football fans are treated needs to change. And this was, it was the worst I've ever seen, and it was the worst I've ever experienced at a football ground. But at the same time, you know, we've all got plenty of other stories where, you know, of being treated appallingly, that you just sort of shrug your shoulders, and a lot of people are fed up with it, very much including me.
The one of the things that comes through in the part of the report I've had time to read, Dan, is this idea of the othering of football supporters has just got to stop. And ultimately, there should be expectations that, for instance, football supporters are both treated and talked about as though they are usual human beings, and not as though they are a problem in the first place. And that is, it still remains to me the sort of the defining mindset factor. John's talks there about people losing the jobs, and I'm not against people losing the jobs, but if you get rid of eight people and the next eight people, for instance, have got the same mindset, then what have we got rid of those people for? For me, this is massively about mindsets. It's about mindsets in the way in which the French police, possibly in general, societally, and other police forces operate societally, including this country's, I hasten to add. But it's also about the way in which football supporters are considered and policed in the first place. And this report is almost a definitive document on why that is wrong.
Yes, the report makes clear that pretty much anybody that was involved in the organisation of this match has got no understanding of who football supporters are, and treat them as an inherent menace to be controlled and managed. The report makes repeated reference to the fact that UEFA refers to the Champions League final as a festival of football. That's how it always sells it whenever it produces brochures, for example, for sponsors in order to attract them. That's what it refers to it as. And one of the recommendations that the report makes is, well, fucking treat it like that then, basically. Treat the people like guests. Treat the people like they're there to have a nice time. Don't treat the idea that you know, 20,000 people might come over without tickets just to enjoy being part of the city and the atmosphere.
People might want to go to Paris.
Exactly.
Like tourists, and it says in there, you know.
And they want the money that comes from that and the economic boom. So treat it like that. That's fine. You don't have to view these people as a threat. But all of them do. All of the people that work at the top of UEFA, all of the people that are in these positions of power in high French society. So in order for all of it to actually change, you're essentially asking or requiring the entire way that tons of institutions across Europe work to change, which should happen, but ultimately is pretty unlikely. So it's, well, where can you get your wins, and how can you alter things so that they are better? Again, a lot of the recommendations that the panel made in the report are to do with UEFA actually just implementing things that already exist. So it makes clear loads of times that it's got loads of safety and security protocols, never follows them, just doesn't bother. No one's interested. And if they did follow them, things would be an awful lot better. There's a particular convention, which is probably hard for me to get across, but it was signed in conjunction with the Council of Europe, which is a Europe-wide human rights organisation, which I believe only Russia and Belarus are not a part of. It's a really important organisation which defines in loads of ways that no one will ever know the ways in which we live across Europe. In 2016, UEFA agreed a convention with them and with some other stakeholders that basically enshrined people's rights to safety and security of football matches in 2016. And since then, it basically seems like UEFA patted itself on the back and has never enforced it in any meaningful way at all. Yeah. And the report speaks from the very beginning about two very key things, and that's one of them, is this convention is great. It pretty much says no one's bothered about it. Fans don't know about it. No one knows their rights when they're at matches. And UEFA certainly don't police it or enforce it in any way. They also completely abdicate their responsibility towards police and security at events, because they've got a strategy of, well, they're the ultimate power in terms of, don't you dare try and organise a football competition in Europe without our say-so. But you want us to get involved with stewarding and policing? No, we've got no power over that. They simultaneously try and have this kind of dual power strategy to them that cannot possibly exist. You're either uber-powerful or you're not at all. And they demonstrate in loads of ways that they are uber-powerful, but they just don't want to do the hard work in some cases. That means that these things are very tangible and can be changed if there's desire to do so and if there is a way to monitor the way to do that. But always with things like this, things which are not legally binding, which the document isn't, none of the reports, the three reports at this point that have been done are in any way legally binding, they all require at least a small essence of goodwill on behalf of the authority. The authority has to think, well, we did get things wrong and need to change. And again, what the report makes repeated reference to is the fact that UEFA and the French authorities still do not actually understand how their failures led to what happened. So UEFA might at this stage put a pretty short apology on its website, for example, but loads of the people in positions of power there actually still don't get it, and that's what the panel found. They certainly found it with the French police and stuff like that as well. There are loads of future events. There are going to be loads of Champions League finals, Euros, Europa League finals, whatever.
And there's going to be the Rugby World Cup and the Olympics.
And Paralympic Games next year. If these people still don't get how what they did led to what the report calls an almost mass fatality catastrophe, then everything's a danger. Every UEFA event that you go to, every event that you attend in France that has a mass of spectators, if these people don't recognise their culpability, do the work to recognise why it happened, and then say, okay, well, this is what we can put in place so that doesn't happen anymore, this is how we can between us all cooperate more, then the same threat persists. And maybe next time, if it happens again, it might be years and years down the line, and it's a group of people who don't, say, have a shared experience or shared kinds of social trauma from something like Hillsborough, then maybe it would go a significantly worse way, because people, first of all, would maybe panic on the night or something like that, and then secondly, wouldn't know how to conduct a campaign afterwards in order to kind of demonstrate their innocence and in order to have the truth shown. So that means that the report is great. The recommendations are all valid. Everything that it finds is accurate. It could not realistically better. But there is still, ultimately at the end of it, a responsibility on the people who did the fuck-ups, and prove they were incompetent enough to make the fuck-ups and subsequently not competent enough to cover the fuck-ups up. Mm. There's still a responsibility on those same incompetent people as it stands to be the ones that enact change. That's why I think it is important. I totally take your point about the mindset, and I don't dispute the mindset thing whatsoever, but it's why I do think it's still important that there are certain people that should lose their jobs, because they've demonstrated a level of dishonesty and lack of competence that means they can never ever possibly be trusted to continue in their function.
The recommendation, I want to do the first recommendation. I'll go to you first on it, John, and then I'll go over to Dan. The first recommendation is for me in lots of ways the most interesting one. And the reason why I say that is because it is absolutely clear to say where failures are identified, UEFA must not just move on, but must rather exercise due diligence to ensure corrective action is taken where required in advance of future events. Next paragraph. It's a key feature of many inquiries and reviews that recommendations are never properly considered or put into action. The reasons for this are varied, but without a robust process, the likelihood of recommendations being ignored or a lack of inertia leading to them being forgotten increases exponentially. Our first recommendation addresses this issue by focusing on internal compliance mechanisms within UEFA. UEFA should construct a process to ensure the recommendations below the panel are implemented, including where appropriate by other stakeholders. It goes on to say this, UEFA should post, by the 8th of May 2023, UEFA should post on its website an action plan containing a summary of action taken with respect to each of the recommendations made in this report. It should highlight matters outstanding and provide reasoning why any recommendations have not been adopted. The published action plan should be regularly updated until all recommendations have been subject to remedial action or considered and rejected with reasoning. It's clever, this, within the report. I think it's very clever indeed to make that the first recommendation, which is there'll be all the other recommendations. If you don't follow them, we want you to explain why you've not followed them from minute one. And I'm really pleased to see that there, and what it should be able to therefore be, as Dan says, because this isn't legally binding. If UEFA reject recommendation one, that it tells us from minute one, they've got no intention of doing recommendations 2 to 21. So by accepting recommendation one, though, it gets them in a situation where they've got to explain at least why they haven't done anything for recommendations 2 to 21. It's very good to see that.
It is. And the reason why I think it is so strong is because, that, you know, all the recommendations are effectively about public safety. You know, we're talking, you know, Dan mentioned there the Festival of Football element, and, you know, it is meant to be fun, but, you know, before we even get to fun, you know, people need to feel safe. And what the report, I think, is pointing out there is that, you know, all these recommendations are about making sure that people are safe while they're at your event. And if you're not going to take them on, you need a really fucking good reason why not. And so what is it? And I think that is completely right, because, you know, I've got an element of sympathy for Paris because, you know, it did host a late notice and, you know, it was all pulled together, but it felt like the thing that got forgotten, or if not forgotten, was the last thing on the priorities was, you know, how are you going to keep people safe? And that should be the first question in the future that is asked, I think, of any city hosting any football event. You know, UEFA should be saying, you know, all these people who weren't inviting, you're inviting to the city, but specifically to the football ground, how are you going to ensure that they're safe and that they enjoy themselves because they deserve to? Because for many people, it's a trip of a lifetime. And, you know, that is fundamental to me. And it seems to me was nowhere on the priorities. You know, they were... You know, it was all about ensuring the sponsors were properly represented and stuff like that. And everything that went into the organisation, and I accept it was at a short notice, everything that went into the organisation, the thing that seems to be on no one's minds at all is the safety of the people attending the event. And that needs to change. That needs to be number one in the future.
The report, again, finds repeatedly that the UEFA CEO of events, a man called Martin Callan, repeatedly sidelined UEFA's safety and security unit from important planning meetings. The safety and security unit was not given documents that it should have been given. It was not given like an operational policing plan. It was basically just an afterthought, the safety and security team, while the events team planned all the fancy bits and made sure that they had Camila Cabello to sing beforehand and all of that sort of stuff. Which again shows where their priorities are. It's just simply not taken seriously in any way, shape, or form. They view the idea of security as something for somebody else to do. And if you therefore end up with somebody else being French riot police, then it's not going to go particularly fucking well, is it? And that should be fairly obvious to anybody who organises any kind of major event. So people like that, for example, are people who've demonstrated a level of incompetence that's not acceptable, and that means that they should not be able to continue in their jobs.
Other recommendations within it, and it's interesting you mentioned the convention, Dan, because in a ridiculous turn of what almost feels like narrative convenience, it is called the Saint Denis Convention, and it was called that from 2016.
The report refers to it as that, as for shorthand, but it was ironically signed in Saint Denis,
yeah,
At Euro 2016. So the exact same place, essentially, where,
yep,
the lack of enforcement of the convention has been proven, is where they all put their names on a document and patted each other on the back and said, "Well done, lads."
Within that, it calls, you say there in the recommendations over and over again, for instance, the idea of recommendation 16 is about being compliant within the convention, being better monitored, having the obligations more comprehensively enforced. All the way through there, recommendation 15 works very, very similarly as well about the way in which UEFA speaks, the way in which it does its post hoc analysis, as it calls it here. On the post hoc analysis point, and to go back to your point about these people who are in post right now and who are presumably, hopefully, digesting this report or have digested this report already, it seems to me as though there was such a rush in the immediate aftermath for the people who have ended up being named in this report to have a certain point of view, for them to absolutely cover their own backs. And the report from the outset, from the first paragraph, opens up and says the idea of the importance of transparency and that organisations should have that after the fact on every single occasion, wherever possible, in order to be able to improve and to change its practices. It's that transparency, isn't it, which still it feels as though is absolutely lacking from UEFA, still feels as though it has been absolutely lacking from aspects of the French government. It's that transparency and openness and that ability to do the post hoc analysis rather than look to throw as much at the wall as possible, which has arguably been as damaging as the actual events on the night.
Yes, you know, if back on the night or the day afterwards, the authorities in UEFA would have said, we made really significant errors here and got this wrong, then it wouldn't have been fine. It still would have happened, but there wouldn't have been all these processes. The sort of re-traumatization effect that some people went through wouldn't have happened. The fact that their instincts, rather than, you know, it was still when we were locked in crushes outside the ground, it wasn't, their instincts weren't to, well, what can we do about that? It was, what can we put on the screen that covers our backs? And what can we put on Twitter, for example, in the case of the French sports minister, that covers our backs? These were not people who, at any point in kind of any hierarchy of their priorities, actually had the safety of the people there, even on that list. It just wasn't, it wasn't like it was even number 7 on a list. It was just not on the list, which is staggering, really. But then, you know, all of them, I mean, you sort of realise this, I think, as you go through life in general, that people in positions of power don't necessarily merit them, either morally or because they're, like, good enough to be there, really. And what I think happened was, you know, if these were smart people, they'd have maybe got away with this. It would have been hard with, like, the amount of evidence that people had and the fact that people had been documenting it, taking videos and stuff right from the start. But they could have had a good go at it. They've now been completely disproven in 3 totally different put reports from 3 different kinds of backgrounds. And what that means to me is that they're just not very good at their jobs anyway, regardless of the fact that you know, I'm saying they shouldn't be in them because they've shown this lack of regard for safety and stuff. Like, if you're going to do a cover-up, at least fucking give it a go. Try and do it well. They were awful at it. It was really easy to disprove them. And I know that it might feel like a long time since the game, but 8 or 9 months or whatever it is, isn't actually that long to have 3 comprehensive reports that prove them wrong. They did such a bad job of not only organising the match, but then trying to organise the smears afterwards, that everybody was able with, you know, everyone that went to match does all sorts of different jobs, has all sorts of different skills. But it's not like everyone was able to come together as one, like, singular mass. We didn't all have a meeting and go, this is what we're all going to say, and you're going to do this next week, and so on and so forth. Everyone, by just being honest and speaking well, was able to be much, much better than them. And I think why that probably is, and again, you see this in various facets of society, and definitely in this country, is that loads of institutions are even more jobs for the boys than what they were in the past. So I reckon when I was a kid, I wouldn't have necessarily liked everything they did, but I reckon UEFA was a competent organisation from what I knew about it anyway, and from what people say, it definitely isn't now. There are people in really high up jobs there who are not smart, like really not smart, and should not be anywhere near that kind of level of influence. And again, in the French government, you know, the 2 ministers who have become real strong villains in this story, you know, I've obviously kept a really close eye on it over the months. Every week they're coming out with some nonsense and being slaughtered in public for it. Not to do with this, to do with totally other things. The sports minister, for example, just went to uni with Emmanuel Macron. She's not even elected. She's not actually a proper politician. In France, you can just be given a job as a minister because you know the prime minister or the president. That's how that works. Again, she's not competent. Shouldn't be doing a job. Same for the interior minister. Shouldn't be doing his job. That's the one of the fundamental issues here is that loads of people with power over the safety of people attending major events are just crap at what they do and should be doing something different. Maybe they have got some skills, but they don't demonstrate them in their current roles, either at UEFA or in French society. And because it's jobs for friends and things like that, that means that, again, the same thing could possibly happen. If you do get rid of these people, then they're just replaced with other kinds of similar variants because there's a real lack of accountability in wider society. But at least if you know these ones are definitely shit and liars, at least you can try and get rid of them. And then maybe the subsequent ones won't be quite as bad. But you can't choose who does these jobs. We can't sit here and say, oh, they should get rid of that sports minister and this one would be better. Like we're all sat here with a candidate in our back pockets or something. But if you know, and if people have demonstrated that they can't do their jobs and that they're dangerous to people, then they shouldn't be able to carry on.
Eight, in the overall conclusions, towards the end of the overall conclusions, John, there's a paragraph that details UEFA has very considerable soft power, in inverted commas. It can literally take its ball elsewhere. It has tools at its disposal.
Sorry, the soft power quote is a direct quote as well from the man I referenced earlier, Martin Callan. He used the word soft power to describe his own organisation and refused to exercise any of it on the night.
So this is the idea of UEFA's soft power, John, for me. It is, you know, recently in the not too distant past, there was the Super League oppositional stuff towards UEFA, and that is still an ongoing thing. You know, it's still going on in the background here, whilst simultaneously UEFA is trying to rally people towards its flag around matters such as that, and we're expected to be sort of rallied towards that flag. I think UEFA's soft power first and foremost should be massively damaged off the back of everything that the report depicts and that we've discussed first and foremost. But also, secondly, there is a reality that so many of these organisations do feel accountable to precisely no one. UEFA are theoretically accountable to FIFA, but no one's got any faith whatsoever in FIFA, as Dan says. You know, you've got this situation where the accountability is so low for these organisations that it is effectively the idea of holding them in contempt is some sort of reversal of that soft power, because there's no hard power that can hold them in contempt.
Yeah, and in a way, that's one of the shames of the European Super League and the fact that they made it an absolute mess of it, you know, in every way, is that it would have been an opportunity to step away from UEFA. Like, that was the only positive element about it, but the rest of it was so kind of mired in greed and, you know, a misunderstanding of what people are in football for, that you know, it was sort of a non-starter. But you know, so we're sort of stuck with the status quo for now. But you know, UEFA have no positive influence on football or football supporters at all. You know, there's a tournament that they hold that is good because it has the best teams in, but for no other reason, it's the football teams and the wonderfully gifted players who make these Champions League nights, who make these Champions League finals. You know, not the organisers who parade themselves around as, you know, visionaries or wonderful sorts of human beings that are relevant. Effectively, they've just managed, you know, through various means, largely nepotism, to be sort of holding the keys. But you know, if there was a way to step away from them, then brilliant for me, because you know they haven't shown any care for the wider game or the people who love it, like us. You know, we're the people who love the sport, who love football, you know, and love our football clubs, and they haven't shown any care for us. All they've shown is disregard and contempt, really. And, you know, I wish we could sort of do away with a lot of them, but I'm not sure what the root of that is.
There's a quote that was in the James Horncastle piece that has just been in my head, Dan. It's been in my head since I read it the first time, and then secondly since Gianluca Vialli passed away, where he, in it, Vialli says, you know, football isn't war. It's a game that you play with your mates. And it's just sort of really stuck with me, that quote, in that football isn't high finance, as some people currently depict it at the moment. It isn't about, you know, governmental vehicles. It's a game that you go to with your mates. That football isn't about governing bodies. It's something that is to be enjoyed with one another. And it's very difficult when you read a report like this, and especially when, maybe if, let's maybe be a little bit optimistic, but let's say if then for a second, if these recommendations aren't acted upon and UEFA doesn't take a good long look at itself, if that is the case, it does just become a little bit difficult to stick with the premise that the whole point is for the thing to be something that you enjoy with your mates first and foremost.
Yeah, with every passing day, I think it becomes harder to believe in that idea. Not necessarily specifically to do with this, but just in general. You know, even that banner for a lawyer at the Etihad the other day, things,
heavy one,
things like that, just like, oh God. Yeah, it becomes more and more exhausting, I'd say, as time passes, because it feels as though you constantly have to fight for really basic things, i.e. being safe when you attend the showpiece fixture of European football. So if people, you know, I saw responses to the article that I put out yesterday and stuff, some people saying that they hadn't been back to match since then, or that they are going, but they just don't feel the same, and things like that. And I entirely understand it, because everybody has a line, everybody has a point that they get to where they will think this isn't worth it anymore, because the idea of it being a fun thing with my mates has diminished to the point that all of the other nonsense, strife, smears, whatever it would be, isn't worth it anymore, and I'll just go and do something else with my life. And I don't blame anybody who feels like that, but God, it's sad that something that is supposed to just inherently be a bit of a laugh and fun is reduced to that feeling for people. The fact that this 158-page report exists is simultaneously brilliant and utterly depressing. It's great that they've done a good job with it. It's great that people know the truth and it can never be disputed, but it shouldn't have to exist. It should just revolve around the fact that people who want to go and watch this entertainment event are able to do so and be entertained and have a nice, safe time. So yeah, you know, people will have kinds of different reactions to it. I hope that, as I said before, I hope that people feel pride in their own actions on the evening and the things that they did since, because if people hadn't have done all of those things, first of all, people would be dead, and secondly, we wouldn't be sitting and talking about this. This report wouldn't exist. So everyone who did anything has made an enormous contribution and should know that. But I also hope that in whatever, you know, if people feel upset by it or yeah, depressed over it, whatever it may be, I hope that they're still able to retain that level of enjoyment of football as that basic concept. But if they're not, I get it. Because how could you, as John said before, you know, if you were to show that to a non-football person and say, but I'm going next week, to think, well, what on earth are you doing? But again, as it says, we're not the people that make the errors. We're not the people who are responsible or need to be held to account. So I hope that people are still able to feel like they can go and have a good time. But if that is the case, you know, for anyone who is, for example, going to go to the match next week, we are all doing it in spite of the people that are organising the event, rather than by being enabled by them and being grateful to them. It's the exact opposite. And that isn't a very good place for anybody to be in, I don't think.
Thanks to John, thanks to Dan. I'd say that'll do, but it won't, will it? There we are.
Sports Social Podcast Network.